Oh wow, we made it. We're here. We survived last night.
I guess we did.
What do you mean we're right here, we're present. We're live.
Yeah, that's true.
That's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a victory in my book.
I am very sleepy.
I know you're very sleepy, but I appreciate it.
I know you're very sleepy.
Oh, I'm wiped out.
But the coffee's helping.
I mean, coffee's my lifeblood.
Yeah.
So I'm pumping full of coffee.
Lifeblood coffee.
All right, that's not going to work. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm your host, Jared Jones. And across the table from me, as always, is the Lois Lane to my Jimmy Olsen, Molly Jane Kramer. Hello, MJ.
To your Jimmy Olsen?
I feel like Jimmy Olsen today.
Yeah?
Okay. And not like the cool Jimmy Olsen on Supergirl, but like the, well, let's say the Lois and Clark Jimmy Olsen right now.
Okay.
I'm in a Superman kind of mood.
Yeah, I think you're always at least a little bit in a Superman kind of mood.
He's my favorite character.
Yeah.
That comes as no shock to everyone.
A month or two ago, when they first announced something regarding, this new Superman writer, Brian Michael Bendis, you wanted to have a Superman episode. And I was like, why don't we wait to have our Superman episode until Action 1000?
Mm.
And you were like, okay, that's good. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, that was a good idea. Yeah. That was a good call. I think we say this almost every week. Almost every episode is a DC episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it really is.
They're kicking out the jams consistently, all the time, at least these days anyway.
We are also biased, so there's that.
Very biased.
Yes.
We are celebrating the milestone issue of Action Comics number 1000. Superman's 80th birthday also heralds one of the impressive feats in comicdom today.
Oh, no, it is super cool. Like, this has, like, landmark issue on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Like, there hasn't been an issue 1000 of anything.
I can't think of any time when Action Comics wasn't being published, with maybe the minor exception of when DC ceased publishing Superman books for a couple of months after the death of Superman. I don't know if they did it deliberately to torture people, but...
Well, I think they wanted to make it his quote-unquote death resonate.
But yeah, Action Comics has been on the stand since 1938. With nary a sign of slowing down, and there's no reason to believe that it's going to anytime soon. It's the flagship title of DC Comics. Brian Michael Bendis is going to be writing it from here on out, till who knows when, probably until he decides that he wants to quit. He's known for very long runs. And it's Superman. It's funny, too, because Action sped up and, lapped Detective Comics, because Detective Comics, it literally began before Action Comics.
Yes, Batman's first appearance was in the 27th issue of
That's right. First issue of Detective has that rather unfortunate Fu Manchu kind of cover.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Now that we've made it here, I'm feeling pretty good about it. I thought I was really going to be kind of cynical, like, yeah, whatever, man.
I feel like since Rebirth, DC has really tried to get the cynicism out of a lot of its stuff. They're really trying to go for the sincerity and the attention they've given the Superman line, the love that its creators have put into it.
Okay.
Like, even like Action Comics before this, I wasn't reading it. I was reading the Tomasi and Gleason et al. Superman book.
So good.
But like the Action book, even though I wasn't reading it, wasn't like super digging it, you could still tell that it was people who like love this character.
I thought it was a really good call with Rebirth to put Dan Jurgens back on, to put him on Action Comics. He's kind of become the elder statesman of the Superman line. I mean, you can go to Superman and read the Gleason, Tomasi, innovative, creative, almost kind of wacky and heartfelt Superman book. Or you can go to Action and get your, I don't want to say typical, but like,
more
standard.
Action-oriented,
DCU focused, Superman stories. And stuff that happened in Action had consequences throughout, the DCU. Like, they brought Cyborg Superman back, and then he popped over to Suicide Squad. Same with Zod. Zod ended up popping up in the Green Lantern Corps book. So it's like Action Comics still matters, in a way, to the DCU. And that's important. It's an important thing to remember, because for a while there, during the Byrne reboot, it was the DC team-up book for a long time.
I remember, I think this was at some sort of DC retailer roadshow from a couple of years ago, and Dan DiDio was talking about Superman and about Action Comics, and saying how much they wanted to be able to make the Superman books the best they could, because as goes Superman, they said, as goes DC. It is their flagship title. It is very important to them, because Superman Action Comics was the first superhero comic book. They take that seriously, and it's nice to see them put their money where their mouth is.
I like it.
Action Comics 1000 was really great. It was really great.
It was. I guess spoilers for Action 1000, nothing of particular import really takes place in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing
with the
crazy.
Exception of the Bendis Jim Lee thing at the end.
Even that, I mean, I don't think there's much in there that's going to be like, oh my God, what happened there?
Yeah, so we're going to break it down bit by bit, piece by piece. So what do you say, MJ? You want to get into this thing?
Sure.
Let's do it. All right, well, the first thing about Action Comics, it heralds the return of one important aspect to the Superman mythos. And, of course, I'm talking about that red underwear.
Oh, yes. The trunks are back.
And the belt.
Hashtag, the trunks are back. That is an official DC Comics hashtag.
I was saying that hashtag all throughout the Action Comics release party we hosted last night at G-Mark Comics here in Chicago. And people looked only marginally annoyed at me. I think everyone was caught up in the spirit of things.
Yeah. No, everybody was really excited. It was cool.
Because Superman finally looks like Superman again. I mean, they're really sticking with the Patrick Gleason cuffs. Gleason gave him cuffs in his Rebirth redesign.
See, you notice all of the minutiae of the costume, and I'm just like, yeah, it looks right, fine, it's cool.
Well, everything about his costume is now back to standard, except for those cuffs. And I don't hate the cuffs. As a matter of fact, with the Rebirth thing, I was like, I like the cuffs, they're serviceable, I guess. I don't understand the function.
Also, why I'm very into the fact that Gleason would have a lasting impact on the character. That's very cool to me.
No, that makes me happy. I'm going to miss the hell out of Patrick Gleason and Pete DeMasi on Superman. It doesn't bum me out, because I know that they're going to go on and do really awesome things elsewhere. And I know that Bendis has incredible plans for the line. But, man, Superman was such a great book. And it really did keep my interest fueled in DC post-Rebirth, because with so much flying at you from the publisher, you need that, you know, that anchor to keep it going every single week. And Superman was that book for me. They have this remarkable piece in Action 1000. Let's just start with that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's one of the stronger ones in the entire issue.
The first one before that is, what is this one? Dan Jurgens and Norm Rapman.
That's right. This is the second part in the issue. Man, it's all told in splash pages. And, of course, evocative of Superman number 75. It's the story told in flashback, and it took me about 3 or 4 pages to realize what they were up to. But once I finally got it, I started to swoon a little bit. But I'm easy to impress when it comes to this.
It kind of goes step by step through the eras of Superman, through different landmark moments in the character's history. It's really, really cool. Gleason switches up his styles
every page. I mean, I know him and Doug Monke are like studio mates. But the first page, I honestly thought was a Doug Monke. The first page is Vandal Savage sending Superman hurtling through time and not wondering if he's ever going to get back. And then, of course, the next page is the page that Gleason shared on Twitter. Superman smashing some gangster in his old, you know, wrestler garb. Then, of course, he stops a locomotive. And then in the next one, he's fighting during World War II. There's this awesome piece of Superman fighting Mole Men. And it's supposed to be a tribute to the Kirk Allen Superman film with Noelle Neal. I think it was the first time she ever played Lois Lane. Although in the image, Superman looks more like George Reeves in it than Kirk Allen. But
does a little bit. Yeah.
I'm not mad about it. It encapsulates the entire era of the 50s TV show and of course the movie serials, which I thought was really, really cool. There's a bit where Superman's fighting a giant dragon, and I really racked my brain to see where like that took place in the Superman lore. I can't find it.
Maybe they aren't all, like, specific references. Maybe some of them are Superman crazies out there. Let us know if there's a specific thing that's referencing that we didn't catch.
I would be very grateful for that. And it just travels through time. And it shows us, like, a snapshot from Dark Knight Returns as Superman gets struck by lightning, a recreation of a cover that John Byrne did of Superman fighting the Silver Banshee. And then it just keeps going on. It goes through Kingdom Come. It goes through New 52, Convergence, Rebirth, and to where we are today with John, Lois, and Krypto sitting around a table wishing Superman a happy birthday.
Yeah, and the final page is just so great.
It's so really great. It's like, that's kind of, it's goofy, it's silly.
It's the only one that has, like, dialogue. The dialogue is spot on, especially for Lois. It's real good.
And he talks to Krypto. That's the kiss-off. He's like, what a tough crowd, huh, Krypto? And Krypto barks. And it's like, That's the kind of crap I want to read in a Superman book, and I don't think Bendis is going to bring that.
I don't know. He can do cheese sometimes.
He can do cheese, but he does chatter. If it's cheese, it's cheddar. Chatter. No.
Cheddar.
And we'll clean that up
chatty,
in post.
Chatty chatter.
Yeah, it's not going to work. That brings us to our first splash page, or our pinup, by John Romita Jr., Danny Mickey, and Peter Steigerwald. I'm thinking like it's trying to evoke memories of the 97 Superman, where he turns electric blue. Then, of course, this is really cool. Marv Wolfman, I think, unearthed some old Kurt Swan pages, and I believe he just wrote a story around them.
Yeah, it seems like that. He was definitely a pinch hitter back then.
Oh, yeah.
For DC.
Kurt Swan is the quintessential Superman artist. I mean, I don't exactly know the chronology, but he arguably worked on Superman the most, or at least most prolifically.
Oh, yeah.
So to have him as a part of this milestone issue
is really, really cool. They did that.
That's a really cool flourish. And of course, one of my favorite pages is the final splash of Superman hovering over the sky, mm-hmm. but by Kurt Swan. You know, it reminds me of the Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow two-parter that he did with Alan Moore when he was walking away from the book forever and Byrne was taken over. Kind of like the passing of a torch. That's what that reminds me of.
And Butch Geis is on the inks on most of those Kurt Swan pages, which is pretty
That's
cool.
That's right. Before we move on to the book, let's just let's get it out in the open. What's your favorite cover?
I don't know. I can't. It's very hard for me to decide because, as you guys probably know, each one is like a homage to a decade of Superman's history. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny that they have a 2000s one, even though there's been the 2000s and the 2010s. I think it's weird. They should have had another one. But I really like the Middleton one. I like it a lot.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I think the Joshua Middleton one is, I could have confused it for an actual cover from the era.
Yeah, this is the 1980s one.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the Allred one, though. I like the Allred one is so good.
It came down to four for me. The Middleton, the Michael Cho cover where he's smashing the axis.
I like the Cho one a lot. The Steve Rude one is super great.
Steve Rude one's cool, but the Lee Bermejo Superman at Sunset cover.
It is super pretty. And I like the fact, I didn't realize until I was counting them in, hundreds and hundreds of them, that Lee Bermejo cover, he's not scowling. Like, he's not smiling, but he's not, like, angry. Like, a lot of times when Lee Bermejo draws Superman, it'll be, like, kind of like an angry, grimacing Superman. But this is a, he's not, he just has a placid look on his face.
He looks like he's flying in to help somebody who's actually really in need.
Yeah. So it's not, I really don't like angry Superman, and it's not.
That's why I thought the Jim Lee standard cover was so odd. His smile, it creeps on me.
Lee doesn't do the smile on Superman very often. He does the angry about to turn on the heat vision.
About to warm up a round of DC Universe Online. That's what it looks like. I always thought, I actually was having a conversation with somebody on Facebook last night about this. The reason I felt the Jim Lee cover seemed a little off is because even though Jim Lee has done two arguably big Superman stories for Tomorrow with Azzarello and Superman Unchained with Scott Snyder, he's not an artist that I would commonly associate with the character, let alone Action Comics.
Oh, me either.
So, and not only that, but to have him draw like this, like, you know, hokey Superman pose with a smile on his face, a pose that would look fantastic from virtually any other artist, seems kind of off-brand for Lee and off-brand for DC and how they employ Lee when he does art in their line.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The Allred cover is absolutely my favorite, colored by his wife, Laura, and it features snapshots of Superman in his life throughout the Silver Age.
So wonderfully Silver Age. And you guys have probably seen, they use the trade dress from each era on mm-hmm. the cover. So it...
The black checker banner on the top.
And it looks like it's printed on pulpy paper. Like, mm-hmm. It's just so wonderful.
It's got, of course, like a Brainiac and Luthor, you know, storming the Daily Planet. It's got Superman smooching Lori Lamaris.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the most we're going to see of Lori Lamaris for a very long time.
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past Bendis to drag her out of the ocean.
We'll see.
Super Babies, Superman, and Krypto entering the Fortress of Solitude with the giant key to the door.
I love that giant key is on that cover. It is great.
Bottle City of Kandor, Streaky the Super Horse and Supergirl, and Beppo the Super Monkey. Wait, Streaky was the cat.
Streaky's the cat. Horse is Comet.
Comet the Super Horse, thank you.
Who was in love with Supergirl.
Yeah. Man, the Silver Age was weird. That's why the Allred cover works, because it's odd, and when the Allreds do it, it looks standard.
And I bet Mike Allred is a Silver Age nut. He probably mm-hmm. just pulled all this straight out of his brain, like, within 5 minutes. Like, this, and this, and this, and this.
Yeah.
And it, I I think that's great. It feels like it's made by a fan for a fan.
This one's it for me. I mean, we ended up buying all the covers, I think. Do we have them all?
Not yet. I think we have them on order and they're on their way in.
Which ones are we missing?
I don't think we bought the Bermeo one yet. See, I knew this was going to happen. I knew you were going to want every single one.
Are we not going to have them all? I thought I'd buy four and you'd get four. I thought that was the deal. That's why I only picked four.
Partially because we were at the midnight release last night and we were scanning in everybody's purchases. So we saw each cover up close and personal multiple times. So it's like, oh yeah, this is really cool looking.
Oh, I mean, the Bermejo cover is like, if I could get a print of that, mat it and frame it, that would go in the living room.
Oh.
Well, we could put it in this room, I guess. I'm not picky. All right, let's get back into this book. What story do you want to talk about next?
Well, the next one in there is the Jeff Johns, Richard Donner, Olivier Coipel, Alejandro Sanchez, Nick Napolitano.
Oh, the car.
Which, like, this is a cool little story, but it's one of the shorter ones in the book. So there's not a ton to it. It's good. Yeah. I like it. It's cool to see Coipel's art in
gorgeous.
A DC book.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
There's this big page right here of Superman standing tall, splash-wise, but there's three panels to intersperse it.
And it's, like, done from this angle from below, so he's kind of, like, looming over the reader. It's pretty cool.
It's a throwback story to the Action number one cover where Superman smashed a car and the gangsters are running away. And it's about one of these guys, hard luck fellas, who happened to be in that car and did happen to get away. Superman tracks him down and tells him that, you know, his life doesn't have to be this way. He doesn't have to pursue a life of crime.
Yeah, there's a couple of the stories in here focus on that, of Superman kind of being like, talking bad, he's out of being bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the job. I really do. I think that's part of the Superman lore that people kind of gloss over sometimes, is that Superman
helps people.
He helps people, and he orates. He's a writer. He's got a big soul, and he's got a big heart, and he knows how to, like, articulate his feelings, and people forget about that. I really, really do. And so when you're reading Superman comics, it's just like smash, smash, smash. Oh boy, I'm late for dinner with Lois. It's like, we're missing something here. And I think that Action 1000, especially the John's Donner story, really got to the heart of that, and I appreciated it.
I don't know if you guys know this, Jared likes Superman a lot.
I like it a lot.
It's pretty cute watching him.
Yeah,
wax all rhapsodic.
I'll wax a car or something. next one, Scott Snyder, Raphael Albuquerque. Who colored this one?
Dave McKaig is his typical colorist.
That's right. This is the only one that features Luthor prominently, Lex Luthor.
Yeah, which is weird.
It's not so weird. I mean, Snyder wrote Luthor in Superman Unchained, and one of the things I appreciated about Superman Unchained is that during the time it was the New 52, and Luthor was kind of, I don't know what they were doing with him. Like, Morrison made him into, like, this mad scientist, like, brought him back to his mad scientist roots, and he had been imprisoned. He was in jail, and he had a big jagged scar on his face, which they quickly retconned out. But in Superman Unchained, Luthor was like his, you know, he was a mad scientist, but he was also kind of like a hybrid between that and, like, you know, animated series, Clancy Brown, got a suit on.
The businessman.
Looking sharp.
I prefer businessman Luthor.
I do too. And that Luthor, with a bit of the mad science, is on display in the Snyder story, which I liked.
I always like Raphael Albuquerque's art, so I was very, very pleased with that aspect of it.
I want to talk about the Tom King one.
The Tom King one is so good.
The Tom King one nearly made me cry.
Well, I think the Tom King Clayman one was the one that they like previewed first.
Yeah.
They posted that first a couple weeks ago.
They showed a couple images on Twitter, and it showed Superman just engulfed in flames. It looked like he was on the surface of the sun. Turns out it's a little more complicated than that. This is actually a story I don't want to spoil for anybody.
Okay. But I do like the third page of it, that shot of Superman. It looks just like Chris Reeve. Just like him.
It really does.
Like the rest of it, it doesn't look like a Gary Frank kind of a thing where he's like doing a straight up Chris Reeve through the whole thing. It's just this page.
He's cast in shadow, illuminated in light.
Like almost a silhouette.
It's perfect. Clayman is such a great artist. And
he's only been getting better, man. So
I know.
Good.
Put him on a standard Superman book. Hey, do we actually know who's going to be working on Action with Bendis when he finally starts putting out the issues?
I don't remember.
I feel
like you would remember if they had.
I need to get my ducks in a row here. Are they just going to be doing Man of Steel for like that month?
That's the first month, yes. Mm-hmm. And then doesn't Superman not start till like July?
I think that's the case, yeah. Because this issue of Superman is the last one until we start getting these Men of Steel's out of the way, which breaks. I'm not ready for this issue of Superman yet. That one's going to break me. The last one with Tomasi and Gleason. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, the Tom King Clay Man one. Set aside some time for that one, people. Bring a box of hankies. Prepare yourself accordingly.
It's one that's also not super long, but it has a lot of emotional impact.
It does.
It's real good.
So we got the Louise Simonson, Jerry Ordway, Dave McKay, Carlos M. Manguel installment.
I think it's really cool that they brought Louise Simonson back for this.
Oh, yeah. No, Wheezy's in the book, and she's in full effect.
Just partially because, oh, yay, it's nice to have a lady in amongst all these boys. Above that, she is an awesome writer, and she has had a huge impact on the Superman mythos.
Oh, no, here we go. We got Jordi Belair and Trish Mulville. And Laura Martin.
Okay, so a lot of colorists.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I love that Jerry Ordway got in on this. Mm-hmm. Dan Jurgens, Jerry Ordway, Louise Simonson. If they could have gotten Roger Stern, who was the writer of Action Comics for a good long time in post-crisis era, I would have been a happy camper. Moving on past that, we got Paul Dini, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Uh-huh.
Doing a Mr. Mixia Spitalik story.
Yeah, no, this was pretty great.
It was awesome. What's Mixia's wife's name? Gisplixlessness? How do you pronounce it?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Gispy is, he calls her that for short. The Mr. Mixia Spitalik episodes of the Superman animated series, by the way, MJ, are awesome.
I've seen a couple of them.
I think there's only three.
Okay.
They're magnificent.
Okay. All I know is that with this story, Mixia Spitalik's wife is way too hot.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the joke, right?
Yeah, but still.
It's the fifth dimension. They could be whatever they want to be.
Then why does he choose to be a little... The little dude.
They say it explicitly in the story. It's like, you like to be the prankster. You like to be this guy, so...
I just think it's weird.
I think it's good luck.
Whatevs.
Hey, we get this panel where Gisby's giving Mixia a kiss on the cheek there. Uh-huh. And he's looking kind of studly, I suppose, right?
No.
As far as that goes, no. Don't like it? That's fine. We got the Brad Meltzer, John Cassaday one, which...
It was good.
Didn't really stick the landing for me, but there's a couple of panels in here where Superman's actually attempting to fly faster than a speeding bullet to stop a bullet entering into a hostage situation that evokes movement and made the story speed up and simultaneously slow down, mm-hmm. which I thought was a really cool effect to do. And then, let's just talk about the Jorge Jimenez pinup real quick.
There is a pinup in here. It is right before the Bendis Lee story. This pinup is fucking amazing by Mr. Jorge Jimenez. We've been like huge fans of him for a long time now. He is a wonderful Superman artist.
Yes, he is.
He's been doing a bunch of the variant covers for Superman previously. Mm-hmm. And
some fill-in issues too.
Yeah, but like his variant covers are always so good. He's great at pinups and covers. And this pinup is, this could be a cover. It's so good. This one I would like to frame up and hang somewhere.
I like the fist to the chin thing. He's like, hey guys, what's going on? You guys doing all right down there? I love Superman. This is great. All right. Time to address the big elephant in the room. Brian Michael Bendis, Jim Lee, Scott Williams, Alex Sinclair, Corey Pettit, The Truth. You read the story.
Are you asking? Yeah, of course I did. We talked about it.
Well, yeah, we talked about it off mic.
Well, you're asking me like, did you read this? Did you make the time?
I was doing it for the benefit of the people who may be listening in this moment. So what'd you think of it?
I liked it.
What'd you think of the big brute?
It's fine. Like, I'm glad it's a new villain. That's cool.
Is this going to be the villain in Man of Steel? It's what it looks like.
I don't know. I don't know if maybe they're going to, like, use it as a vehicle to, like, explore his past. Because that's what it seems like they're going to be doing.
We just did this with the Oz effect. We just did this with the Booster Gold team up during Action Comics the last 5 issues.
But this is going to have, like, a 20 times more eyes on it than those stories did.
I guess. Hey, here's the thing. So Action, they're going to do, like, a swan song issue, and Superman's going to do a swan song issue with their respective creative teams and like little one-shot specials, which I think is a nice send-off, but it kind of shows how obtrusive Bendis was into the paradigm. Like, everyone kind of had to wrap everything up to make room for him.
This is a big deal. So, I mean, I can see that they're going to want to give him the red carpet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this was part of his, you know, contract or whatever when he first signed on.
Oh, I knew he wanted to do Superman. I mean, it's no secret that he loves the character, but I was kind of wondering, I was like, when we first announced that Bendis was coming over to DC, I was like, what could he be doing?
Yeah, and all of us were very, very, very curious.
Yeah, what kind of stories could he tell? I'm not hot on this story too much. I think it might be the Lee art that kind of takes me out of it.
This is the best Lee art I've seen in a while. It doesn't seem as rushed as I feel like it's been the last couple times I've seen it.
You think this kind of was the reason why we didn't get full Lee art in The Immortal Men?
Could be. I mean, also, we got to remember, Jim Lee is like trying to also run the company as well. I don't know why they bother trying to put him on comic books anymore.
Because he still sells books.
He does, but if he's not going to be on them, those books aren't actually going to sell in the stores. But this short story, I enjoyed it. But when we're talking about the chattiness of Bendis, there are two sort of like extra characters, background characters that end up doing more in the story and are just talking the whole time.
They're just chatting.
I mean, it's cute, but it's also like, it's not as Bendis-y as shit can get.
It's a harbinger of things to come.
But like
after
how many years? 10, 15 years of reading this stuff at Marvel. Mm-hmm. Like this is Bendis not going full Bendis yet. But yeah. As far as
they're gonna let
abundance of dialogue goes.
Yeah.
It's not obtrusive yet.
Right.
And it serves the story, but it's noticeable.
It is noticeable. Now that we're at the end, Action Comics 1000, how do you feel it functioned as a milestone issue, as a heartfelt love letter to the Man of Steel? What do you think? How did it fare?
Oh, I think it worked well. I think anyone who is like you, like a diehard Superman fan, is going to be really thrilled to see this many eras represented, not just in the covers, but within its pages.
Absolutely.
They do a really good job of both in like the story content and in the creators that they've used. It's very cool.
It's great.
Richard Donner is co-writing one of the stories.
I know. That was so awesome. Yeah. I think DC did a hell of a job. I hope it sells 1 million copies. I really do. 5 million copies. Who cares?
I don't think it'll sell that many, as it's a $7.99 book. But I think it will do well.
Mm-hmm.
At least at our midnight sale last night, there were very few people who only bought one cover.
Yeah.
These covers are amazing. It's hard to repress the collector instincts. It's like, oh, every single one of them.
Because they got us right where they want us, MJ.
There are also store exclusive variants.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you ordered like 5,000 or something, your store gets its own cover. And so like there's one of the covers, there's a store in Sydney that Nicola Scott did the cover for. You've probably seen it.
I saw it.
Superman
standing
there. And there's one that there's an Art Germ variant.
Right.
That has Superman and Supergirl.
Superman weirded me out.
Yeah.
Freaking out.
And it's slightly, he just can't help making Supergirl be a little upskirty.
Superman and Supergirl are flying together, and they're a little
they're
too cozy. They're cousins.
Yeah,
come
they're
on,
very close.
People. What are we doing?
And I think there are a couple more of this of the store exclusive covers.
I haven't seen too many of them.
There's not a lot. I feel like there's a Coypel one.
No, there is. There is a Coypel one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for the hardcore collectors not to want to get every single one of those.
True.
I'm looking at Jared as I say that.
Hey, come on now. This is like everything I ever wanted. I remember being a kid and actually doing the math. I'm like, when are they going to hit 1,000? And I had it pegged for like 2019, 2020.
But that wasn't counting that they would start double shipping every month.
Yeah, double shipping. So, and this isn't the first time DC did it. They did Action Comics Weekly for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, they expedited things. But I'm grateful it's here. I'm grateful I got to live long enough to see Action Comics 1,000. Now I can retire and, I don't know, move to Florida or something. Want to go to Florida?
No.
Oh, I didn't think so. All right, MJ. We're way over time, as usual. You want to do the top five?
Yes.
Let's do the top five.
We're going to make it quick.
All right, MJ, kick us off this week. What do you got?
My first one is Lazarus number 27. It is finally returning from a long hiatus. They did like a mini series in between that kind of told about other miscellaneous characters they've introduced, but this is coming back to the main story. Written by Greg Rucka, art by Michael Lark with Tyler Boss, colors by Santi Arcas, letters by Simon Boland. This is an amazing series that, as it's gone on and as life has gone on, has become more and more prescient and frighteningly real feeling. Lazarus is an amazing book. Go pick it up. Awesome. Issue 27. What's your first one this week, Jared?
First pick this week, I'm going to hype up Wasted Space, number one from Vault Comics, written by Chicago native Michael Morsi. Illustrated by Hayden Sherman, one of my personal favorite new artists, colored by Jason Wordy, letters by Jim Campbell. Waste of Space. Michael Morrissey loves doing his sci-fi stuff. He very much is of a mind to a certain sci-fi aesthetic, and Waste of Space is very much of that mind. This one is an R-rated version of that. If you've read his debut novel, Black Star Renegades, you might think you know what you're getting yourself into. Read this issue, you'll be pleased to find out that you were completely wrong. Hidden Sherman's art is absolutely stunning. Reminds me of Ronin in a lot of places, which is a good thing when you're reading a book like this. Waste of Space, number one, my first pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is Poe Dameron, number 26.
Oh, boy.
I don't think I've had a Star Wars book on here in a while.
Yeah, but it would be that one.
Well, the reason I'm putting this one on here is because the Poe Dameron book, which is written by Charles Sewell, art by Angel Unzueta, colored by Arif Prianto, and letters by Joe Caramagna. At issue 26, they're finally getting to, as far as the movies go, current continuity.
Mm-hmm.
So before, it was just like telling, you know, the story, Poe's story leading up to the movies. And they finally give them the go-ahead to have it take place now. Issue opens up with Poe, Finn, and Rey on the Millennium Falcon, sitting at the Millennium Falcon's little table there.
Oh, you
there.
Mean like post-Jedi?
Yeah, post-Jedi. Oh, they're just like chatting. So I am super stoked to have comics take place in that current world.
Hey, is Poe still, putting the shine on Rey a little bit?
I'm not going to give any spoilers.
Right,
I mean,
fine.
But come on, Poe Dameron kind of flirts with everybody. You've seen the movies.
He's got those flirty eyes.
That pretty hair.
Flirty bedroom eyes.
That pretty hair.
All right, that's enough.
We just watched Last Jedi the other night, and I was just like giggling at how pretty he is, and Jared's just like shaking his head at me, but also kind of agreeing.
I get it.
What's your next one, Jared?
IDW, I don't know, something happened with Diamond, and they shipped IDW's April 25th books to this week, so we got all three Black Crown releases this week.
IDW also okayed their stuff going on sale at midnight, so they might have just been like, hey, people are going to be in the store to buy Action 1000.
Buy them, yeah.
Let's put all of our books in the store as soon as possible so they can.
I can't see the harm in that. So it was really hard for me just to pick one. We got Black Crown Quarterly, Assassinistas number 4, and of course, Punk's Not Dead number 3, which turned out to be my pick. I literally picked it at random.
Yeah.
I just closed my eyes and pointed at one, and it was this one.
Eeny, meeny,
miny, moe. Almost eeny, meeny. Yeah. Didn't eeny, meeny. Just let fate take place. But yeah, Punk's Not Dead. While I have admittedly said many times that I love Black Crown all the way through, Punk's Not Dead has definitely become one of my favorites. It's done by David Barnett, Martin Simmons, Aditya Bidikar. Martin Simmons is quickly becoming one of my favorite artists. He's been doing covers for Marvel, so who knows what he's going to be getting up to in the year to come.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really cool. This guy's blowing up, and it pleases me, because this book is so damn good. It's like Film Noto, Sienkiewicz, and of course, that classic Shelley Bond mod charm. If you haven't checked out Punk's Not Dead yet, get on this bus. It's an awesome book. Punk's Not Dead, number 3. My next pick this week, MJ, what's next for you?
Well, my next one is Batman Creature of the Night, book 3.
See, I wanted to pick this one, but I knew you would, so I backed off.
Thanks for leaving it for me, babe.
It's such a huge week this week. Everything came out.
No, it is. Written by Kurt Busiek. Art, colors, and cover by Jean-Paul Lyon. Letters by Todd Klein. This book has been so cool. It's out of continuity. It's hard to explain. It's like a character who's sort of takes place in the real world, and a character who was super inspired by Batman, but also sort of becomes Batman.
I interpret it as he loved Batman so much that he manifested him in the real world. But it's like the unfocused id version of Batman.
Yeah, no, it's such a cool interpretation, playing with the idea of Batman and just the reader's ideas of Batman. It is great.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's Jean-Paul Lyon art. Like, anytime you get Jean-Paul Lyon on interiors, you really should pick that up. It's your duty as a comics reader.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Batman Creature of the Night, number 3 from DC. What is your next one, Jared?
This one I've been really anxious to read. Her Infernal Descent, number 1, by Lonnie Nadler, Zach Thompson, Kyle Charles, Dee Knief, and Ryan Ferrier. Like Dante's Inferno, but it's about a grieving mother who literally goes through hell to find her children. Like, goes through this Alighieri-esque jaunt through the inferno to find the people that she lost, which is an awesome, awesome concept. Go pick up Her Infernal Descent, number 1, from Aftershock. That's my next pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
My next pick, which I think is also one of your picks, is Black Hammer, Age of Doom from Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. And this is written by Jeff Lemire with art by Dean Ormston, colors by Dave Stewart, letters by Todd Klein. Creators on here
let's say
are
the,
like stellar.
The Eisner Award winning team of Black Hammer.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot of people who have won Eisners separately as well. It's, mm-hmm. it's an all-star.
And then they won it all for this one, too.
Yeah, no, it's such a good book. Mm-hmm. If you like superheroes, if you like the history of superheroes, both metatextually and otherwise, pick this book up. They're kind of doing a new number one on it after they have done two tie-in miniseries that are very relevant to the main series. But I am so glad to have this book back. Black Hammer, Age of Doom, number one.
Yes, that was also my pick. So we'll just bring it right back to you, MJ.
My final pick is another IDW book, mm-hmm. Which you're right, it did come early because I feel like issue two just came out.
Yeah.
Highest House, number three. And this is a weirdly magazine-sized comic written by Mike Carey, art and letters by Peter Gross, colors by Fabian Alquier. Carey and Gross are most famously worked on the original series of Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
They are two super, super fantastic creators. And this book is it's sort of a fairly standard fantasy story, but it's done so well.
It's a gorgeous looking book.
Yeah, I just love it so much. And I'm a nerd, but I like that it's magazine sized. I like the spot gloss on the cover.
Where are we supposed to put it?
I don't know. In a magazine sized board, in a magazine sized box. But it's a really great series. If you've been thinking about jumping on this, you really should. It's the third issue of The Highest House. And what is your last pick for the week?
Well, my last pick is a Black Mask book. I like that I got three of my favorite publishers
this week.
Let's say four. Vault's quickly becoming a big favorite of mine.
If only there had been a young animal this week.
If only. We got Survival Fetish number one by Patrick Kinlan, Antonio Fuso, and Jim Campbell. So this is a story about a guy named Sahir. He's a courier. He does a lot of crazy parkour and jumps from rooftop to rooftop to get medicine and information to people in a very hostile Honolulu. And there are militia and gangs who have taken up Sniper's Nest. They fight as snipers and they take shots at him as well. I'm sure there's far more to it. The art by Antonio Fuso, his artwork reminds me of Jock at his finest. His sequentials are very clean and very sharp.
It's all black and white.
Oh, and it's all in glorious black and white. We did a preview of this. I got a taste of 8 pages of it. I want more. Gonna read it as soon as we're done here. Survival Fetish, number one, is my last pick this week. MJ, that's all we got. Let's move on to the questions.
All right. So our question this week, which Action Comics number 1000 cover was your favorite?
That's right.
Matt Strawbridge on Facebook said Mike and Laura Allred. They're all fantastic covers, but that one just stands out.
Back over on Facebook, Tony Farrow said Steve Rude definitely, although they're mostly all pretty great. I feel like Jim Lee kind of phoned it in, which seems like an odd decision considering that it's a pretty big deal.
Also my Facebook, Matt Kramer says Allred, always Allred. And Chris Johnson says the Allreds, it's just so perfect.
Randy Field on Facebook said, that show cover is my fave, but it also makes me a little sad thinking about what Darwin Cook could have done with a cover.
Leah Calderon on Facebook also said show. And then Ernie Estrella said show and Allreds were tough to narrow down to.
Joe Hammerling on Facebook said, Allreds for the win. But can we talk about how Starenko's Superman is handling that flag? I'm a little uncomfortable, to be honest.
Brian J. Crowley said, I really like the Nicholas Scott cover.
Clyde Hall on Twitter at CJ Hall 1984 said, they're all beautiful, but the Mike and Laura Allred 1000 is my huckleberry.
Dang, this is an Allred love party. I love it.
I'm fine with it.
Love it. Also on Facebook, Ryan Lynch says, Allred's for sure. I love how period accurate it is.
Andrew of Earth at Andrew of Earth on Twitter said, Bermejo for sure. Jurgens is a close second. He's the Superman of my childhood.
I do like the Jurgens one. My friend Corinne McCreary pointed out that the coloring is off on Lois's hair for that era.
It's true.
Should be that more auburny kind of almost red. And also Corey on Facebook said all red for her answer.
I see.
Since the Allreds have already gotten so much love from everybody, I guess I will pick The Middleton one. Yes. Okay. I don't understand why the Middleton one didn't get more love. I just love Josh Middleton.
I do too. Like, and I think that's a phenomenal cover.
Every single one of his Batgirl covers just make me like go, ah!
It looks like the cover to a Superman novel about Brainiac. Totally crazy space sci-fi stuff that never got written. Somebody should write that someday. I don't know. Well, anyway, that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 53-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe. Tell us how we're doing. Or search Casual Wednesdays over at doomrocket.com. And while you're on the internet, look us up on Twitter, why don't you? I'm at @JarrettJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At MollyJaneK underscore. No.
No.
At MollyJane_K. That's it. MollyJaneK_.
And that's it. So until the day we finally get a JSA 1000.
I wish.
I remain Jared. That's MJ over there. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day.